Welcome to an Apple Rumortastic edition of Digital Outbox. Hello again. Joining me this week is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi there, Ian.
And Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Ian.
And I'd love to say that Shaquille was here, but unfortunately, 2 years ago, Shaquille had an operation. And that operation hasn't gone well.
Oh, no.
Now, his life's not in danger.
Yeah, I think we're over-dramatising this somewhat.
But he is an optician's, so hopefully his eyes get a little bit better.
He's gone to the opticians. Okay.
I know, I just thought I had to play it up a little bit. And I've given him the cold, seemingly, although no bodily fluids were involved in that exchange of germs.
You just handed them over, you know.
I just freely.
Here you go. What friends do.
Our podcast this week is probably going to be dominated by the Apple event.
Oh, yeah!
Let's rev
it up. I'm excited already, and it's not happening till Wednesday.
I know.
I have to say, I am a little bit excited, actually.
See, drip.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I got like this before the last one, and I was a bit disappointed. So, but this time, I feel that my excitement is justified.
So, but I think this one's taking on iPhone proportions for you know how everybody's getting excited about it.
Yeah, and let's be fair, there's not been a really big Apple announcement for the last 2 years. In fact, 3 years since they made the iPhone announcement back in beginning of 2007.
No, everything else has been little increments, hasn't it? Little bits and bobs.
So there's probably a couple of things that are going to come up on Wednesday that aren't as exciting. So there's talk of iPhone OS 4, and there's all sorts of rumours about multitasking and revamped interfaces and basically blah blah blah, because it's just going to be incremental probably. Or can you guys see something groundbreaking coming out of that?
I think we're going to come on and talk about the tablet, I guess, in a bit, and I think OS 4 yeah, I think OS 4 is actually going to be quite integral to that as well, but we'll come on to those predictions soon, I guess.
Indeed.
I mean, one thing I have said in the show notes, and there's quite a big part of me that just wants this not to be the tablet. I want it to be something completely different, and Apple have been just dripping out bits and bobs to put everyone off the scent or something. I don't know. I'd quite like it if they didn't do a tablet.
Oh, you'd love it if it was iPhone colours.
I would. I'd just absolutely love it. There'd be a big part of me that was, going, wah.
So the... No, I'd be annoyed, I must admit. So the other talk seems to be iLife 10, and if you're a Mac user, iLife seems to come out, you know, start of the year and gets fairly incremental upgrades. Although, again, we can't not mention the tablet, because the rumour this time is it's going to be a touch-type interface for some of the applications, which makes sense for something like iPhoto, I guess.
Mm, definitely.
But apart from that, it's all tablet.
Tablet. Ooh, that's tasty.
You definitely think there's going to be a tablet then, yeah?
Yeah. So much so that we're not just going to cover rumours, we are going to make predictions.
Oh, yes.
See, that's far more risky, isn't it? I mean, anyone can just say about a rumour that's come up.
Yeah.
We're
going to make predictions, and we're going to have a competition.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, as you said, this could be car crash podcasting. Who knows what will happen in the next 20 minutes. But in a kind of Top Gear style competition, we are going to make some predictions based on a series of questions that Henry has set yesterday.
And then Ian's going to unilaterally decide who wins points and who doesn't.
I feel like I've taken the Jeremy Clarkson role in this, so chances are I won't lose.
You always had the Jeremy Clarkson role in this. That was always a foregone conclusion if ever there was one.
Quite scarily, I know who Hammond is and I know who May is.
Oh, dear, dear.
Actually works out pretty well. That's scary. So, first, the first question...
To the short one.
What is the name going to be? So, come on.
Come on, Richard.
I am going for Slate. We heard Slate being rumoured a while back, and everyone went, ooh, so much so that even other people have sort of made a jump on it. We saw that at CES with Microsoft announcing Slates. But I don't think it's going to be iSlate. I don't think it's going to be anything I. I think it's just going to be Slate.
Fantastic. Henry?
I'm still going with iPad. I think that kind of fits in with iPod, and an iPad is kind of pretty cool, and the stuff that's come out recently, I think, yep, yeah, I'm going with that iPad.
I'm going to go with Canvas.
Ooh, okay. Ooh. Hence the dripping of the paint in the end.
Well, it's when I saw that the other day, and it's not, it was somebody, it was the guy, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, I'm trying to find it desperately while spinning this out. Cable Sasser or Caesar, I'm going to pronounce that wrong, but I don't really care. So he's the guy that runs Panic. And if you remember, I mentioned Coda and a few other things. He tweeted out regarding the Apple Invite and just throwing this out there. What if it's called Canvas?
But haven't Microsoft got this kind of run on Canvas with their know, interface? But and it's surely this is going to be far too similar.
But it does make sense. So well, I don't Microsoft know. I just really like the name Canvas.
I like it.
Slate and Pad and I know other people are talking about iTablet.
It would certainly make sense as far as the invite that's gone out. I just think Microsoft might have had that tied up with all their Canvas, basically.
So I'm going to go with Canvas.
Okay.
Next question.
Good stuff.
Will I have a docking station? I've went for no, and I wouldn't want one either.
So when you're saying docking station, you're saying something that's got then a keyboard and a mouse sat with it, yeah?
Yes.
Well, I've said nope, absolutely not, because it'd be far too compromised. It'll make the device too similar to a laptop or a desktop.
Well, I think there will be one. I think there'll be one.
Well, thank goodness for that.
That's a relief, isn't it? Shall I say it's an optional extra?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, but do you think it's going to have a mouse?
Well, some of the docking stations you get for PCs and things, they just have more. It's just easier to plug things into that.
Mm.
So it's stuff you can have, accessories you can have plugged in. So rather than being,
but it'll also hold it in a particular position so that you can look at it rather than.
I mean, there have been those mock-ups where it's like, you know, it's like it's almost like the tablet is just a screen, and you're taking it away, and you can get all your media, and then you come back to your. You know, your base, and you just so plump it in somewhere.
Those mock-ups did look great. I mean, they look really nice. Yeah. I just think from a input point of view, it's you can't have a docking station couldn't have it anything other than vertical, really. But if you know, to be able to type on a screen that's only got an on-screen keyboard, it has to be sort of almost lying flat, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it depends if it comes. If it comes with a docking station, you can have USB and you can plug a keyboard in and all that good stuff. I guess that's what's in my head. But I don't think I'll have one.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think that's too compromised for Apple.
Right, moving on. Will we require a mobile phone contract?
Who's going first?
I'm saying we will definitely require a mobile phone contract for this.
Me too. Okay.
And I'm saying I think there's going to be a split.
Oh, well, I'm not saying the same. So, right, okay.
A la iPhone, iPod Touch. So I think there's going to be a device that will have a SIM card in it. And you'll need a mobile contract, and I think there'll be a device that is to be used at home. Just same split as the iPhone, iPod Touch.
I think it'll be like the Kindle. So you're not necessarily buying a mobile contract and paying a monthly fee. There'll just be part of this, you know, cost up front that you're buying is this always on type device.
So you think they're going to give away a lifetime contract with it?
I think you will pay for a lifetime contract.
Okay.
The difference between giving away and paying for.
I don't think you're going to find a mobile provider that wants to go with that, but
we'll see. Okay. And it'll all be built. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some constraints in there and all that good stuff, but time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question, I guess, is a bit more. Well, the question has been termed out, so I've got American focus. Do you think it'll just be one sole provider, or do you think there'll be a combination? So Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, or over here, is it going to be O2 exclusive or a Vodafone exclusive? And I've went for combination. I don't think they'll go exclusive with one provider.
I think the provider is going to be a secondary thing to this. I haven't actually answered this question, so I'm going to answer it on the spur of the moment. I'm going to say I think they'll be exclusive because I think it has to be.
Henry?
I don't think it'll be exclusive in Europe and the rest of the world, but I will say it will be exclusive in the States.
Fantastic.
Mm. Great. Some and, splits coming on.
But I don't think it'll be AT&T in the States.
So our next slightly bizarre question, but it does make sense in the context of some of the rumours this week, is do you see Apple partnering with either Google, Microsoft or Yahoo? And I guess this is based on, there was a lot of, I think it was Business Week through the, had a story through the week saying that there was some fairly advanced talks between Apple and Microsoft, and that we could see Bing replacing Google as the default search and also the default maps inside the iPhone. So
there were some interesting rumours. I can't see it happening. I think they've been onto a good thing with Google and I think they'll keep with it.
As do I. Henry?
Yeah, no, I do actually too. I don't think...
So, go Google, go.
It's just too hard a step to think Microsoft working with Apple, isn't it?
It's just not going to happen. I just can't see, I just can't for the life of me see...
The only thing about it is obviously that Google are the common enemy.
They are the common, but I just, for some reason, I just can't imagine firing up, you know, a standard app on the iPhone and seeing like Bing as the default provider of search.
Yes, branded Microsoft over it. Yeah,
it just doesn't compute. No, but stranger things have happened, and Google over the last year certainly has become a far bigger competitor. Our next question is I/O connections, which I guess is going to maybe be slightly biased depending on what you thought about docking stations. I'll crack mine out first. I think it's going to be really simple. I don't think they're going to have very much at all, and it'll be a dock connector, so you can take advantage of all the other bits and pieces that are out there for the iPhone already. A headphone socket and power.
Okay. Well, added to those, so I've said headphones and mic in, I've also put it there. So whether that's a mic in or actually a microphone embedded, you know, same thing for me. But I said I want to see HDMI out. Now, whether we're going to get that, I don't know. But that's what I want to see. I don't see that having anything like USB. But I do see it maybe having Bluetooth connectivity. Obviously, the Wi-Fi and 3G. But that's about it. That's all I see. So
yeah, I mean, I'm assuming
I want to see an HDMI, no USBs. And I want to see a headphone and mic in. That's about it, really.
I guess I'm just assuming the Wi-Fi and 3G is there by default.
Yeah, I think we can also. What about Bluetooth, though?
Probably.
That's not good enough for points.
Well, you know what points mean?
I'll decide if it's good enough for points.
Yeah.
After Wednesday.
What, so, if they announce that it may have Bluetooth?
So, Henry.
Yeah, but internally, obviously, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and 3G, but I think it'll just have the two connections like it's got at the moment. Your kind of audio,
like it's got at the video. Moment.
What, sorry, what? like the iPhone has at the moment. Sorry, so it just has a dock connector and a audio mic input.
Yeah, and I just okay. can't see them changing it.
I don't think they'll have. I don't even think they'll have a power connection. I think it'll all go through the dock thing at the bottom. So that's it. Very neat.
Next up. It's all about the screen. So what type and what size?
Where's Shaq when you need him, eh?
Exactly. Now, Chris, you weren't too bothered about points before we started the podcast, but as times went on, you've become more and more pernickety. So I'm going to let you go first. And it's to the nearest half inch, please.
Okay, so the nearest half inch is going to be a 10-inch screen.
Wow.
It's... I think, like going with my theme of the same split of the iPhone, iPod Touch, I think there's going to be, on the higher end machine, I think it'll have LED, and then there'll be a lower spec one that's got an LED.
Henry.
Oh, LCD, I mean.
Oh,
what am I talking about, you?
I was so tempted to correct you, but I knew I could get you in points then.
I think it's a 10-inch LCD.
Fantastic. I'm 10-inch OLED. Purely because I just can't believe they release something now without OLED. But then again, it's Apple.
And 10 inches OLED is a big difference from the small devices that have come out with it globally so far, cost-wise.
The sensible head is probably Henry's spot on, but come on, 10-inch OLED.
But I think I've shot myself in the foot anyway, haven't I? Because I've sort of gone either way for my two devices. I've come up with two devices.
Well, you've come up with two devices, which is interesting. That is an interesting prediction in itself. Yeah. And worth an extra 5 points if you're right.
Well, easy, five. Tiger. So memory, I'm saying it's only going to have a gig.
This is the thing I've put not important. I've just said enough to run plenty of apps concurrently.
Sorry, that's not good enough.
I am going to go then with 2 gig.
Oh, Henry.
No, I'm going for 8, 16, or 32, same as an iPhone or something. Definitely.
I'm talking, I've got storage separate.
Yeah. Oh, you've got storage separate, okay.
Yeah, okay. So.
Yeah, so no, I think you're right, only a gig of memory.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to have, you know, much at all.
Definitely think more than one.
No, I don't.
Because what does the iPhone have? Does it only have about 256 megabytes?
Oh, it's 256 or 512, it's not a lot.
But when you get into multitasking and multi-apps, you're going to need a lot of space to move around in.
Yeah. So, storage. And to be honest, I haven't really given this much thought. Storage-wise, I don't know, 64 gig probably.
Wow. I've said 500 gig hard drive.
I think they're going to go solid state.
Okay, then. If it's solid state, 250 gig.
It's
a media machine.
No chance.
It's got to be able to hold your media.
Nope. No chance.
No.
Nope. Okay. That's fair enough. But I mean,
so I'm saying 64 gig because I just can't believe that they're going.
It's just not going to hold any media, then, is it?
I'm going the same as the iPhone, a 16 and a 32.
Yeah.
It might even have an 8 as well.
Wow.
Oh wow.
Yep. Wow. Yep.
That's what I think.
I quite like this split because that's interesting because that's changing what the device is, isn't it? Between
us. Yeah, it is.
We see these things as different.
Yeah.
So, I'm so tempted to pull a tumbleweed soundtrack out, but I'll wait a minute. So, unibody or not? So, for me, it's a yes.
I said definitely.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. Battery life, 10 hours.
I've said has to be 8 hours. As in, not exactly 8 hours or more, basically, but yeah.
Yeah, and me, it's at least 10 hours. Henry?
I think it'll only do about 6.
Whoa, controversial.
That's probably more realistic. I'm just, I think I've just put 8 as a wish list, really.
Hey.
Well, I think it has to be at least 8 if it's to be really very particularly useful, but I don't really see that they can pack a battery in that kind of size of device that will do that kind of length of time. For that size of screen.
So, I'm going to change the order around here. Next, I'm going to go for killer apps, which is going to be a difficult one to measure, but trust me, I will measure it. Henry, what do you think? Killer apps.
I think that rumor that came out this week about iTunes on the cloud is the thing. So basically, you've paid for music. You've not actually uploaded your music to Apple servers, but you'll be able to listen to your music, listen to copies of that particular song, from the cloud. So Apple will serve up that music.
Chris,
well, my mind runs a bit long on this, but I mean, I've said yeah. Apple announced iTunes.com at the event, so whatever that live, online thing is, and I think it's going to be wider integration. You know, they're going to integrate that into iOS 4 and things like that, but it's going to be part of what they offer this tablet as. I've said the magazine, and you know, newspaper, magazine, book integration. I think it's going to be slick as you like, and I think that's going to be a compelling reason to buy it. You know, that whole thing where you kind of what the Kindle's doing, where you can subscribe to a newspaper and have it delivered overnight ready for you to wake up to in the morning. So I think that's going to be a big selling point and one that is, I think they'll call it their killer app. But I've also said, I think it's going to run all iPhone apps. I don't know how it's going to do it. I think it is going to. And then it's going to have a new app store for a dedicated app for itself. So that's my prediction about what its big selling points are going to be.
Okay.
Damn.
Can I say that I think it... Well, so you say what you think, Ian.
No, well, it's just pretty much the same. I think that for me, iTunes and the cloud's a given just because...
Yeah, yeah.
So many people are talking about it. They've bought Lala. They're buying this, you know, they're building this big, you know, data, you know, storage place in the States. And to me, it makes sense. And you know, it gets away from having to carry all my media around with me. You know, yep. If it's in one place on the cloud and I can connect it from any device, I don't need to worry about syncing it all the time. And it makes so much sense.
It'd be great if it was really, really cheap price as well, wouldn't it? As in, you know, pence per file then.
Yeah, and we'll just...
I think it will be free.
Yeah, that's...
The stuff you've bought on iTunes, you can stream it for free.
Yeah, that's the way I'm thinking. It's like you've paid your 79p or 99p, listen to it anywhere. And I guess I'm maybe a bit biased with the mini stuff that I'm doing just now, but see this Plex interface or Box interface where I've got all my media and I can easily get to it, and it's got a whole lot of metadata against it as well. I really think, you know, if you compare it to what Apple's got now with Front Row's not changed in years. I really do think it needs a really good kick. Now, whether that's the kind of, you know, magic sauce, the glue that's holding all these other things together, I don't know. But that, you know, to see this kind of magazine format or ebook format, or whether it's movies or music or applications all wrapped up in this sexy front end, that would be.
That's kind of why I've said I want an HDMI output, because I want to be able to put whatever that's coming out of this thing onto my TV as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. Mm-hmm. And in my last bit was definitely apps. There's no way that's not going to have some sort of app platform. The App Store's just been such a killer feature for the iPhone.
Is it going to run existing iPhone apps?
No.
Well,
I think it will. I think it's the way of hitting the ground running.
Yeah, but
you've got 2 billion.
But my issue is things like, you know, the graphics and the environment, and there's certain things that on the iPhone that, you know, like if you kind of scale that up, some won't scale very well at all.
No,
I don't know.
I really think they're going to have a separate SDK for it, a separate.
I think it's going to be an enhanced SDK rather than separate.
Yeah, you know? See, I don't. I think it'll be a.
I think it's going to be very, very similar. I think it's going to be very, very similar. The only difference is it's going to have some sort of taskbar for app swapping.
Yeah,
but it will also. I mean, the screen resolution things will be different because you've got different screen sizes. I think it's actually easier for them just to kind of keep it all separate. And I think that's what they'll do. I mean, you know, they could have kind of got some of the things which are available on the little iPods, the little games and things for iPods, but. They didn't. They brought out something completely new for the iPhone. I think they'll be doing something similarly.
Okay,
different this time.
I think there'll be a way of scaling up the graphics so they don't look horrendous, just, you know, on a bigger form factor. And there's plenty of ways you can program things to cater for different, different resolutions. I mean, that's done across most platforms.
No,
really.
Definitely. But I just can't see them. Well, I guess it all comes down to when it ships as well. I mean, I don't think it's going to be something you buy on the day. So I think whatever they announce on Wednesday, I think there'll be an easy way of porting an app into this new format. You know, so if I look at the Guardian app, I don't think it's going to take, you know, months of work to take that app and turn it into a tablet, you know, style app.
Okay, but you're saying at this stage, so I'll only get my points then if they work straight out of the box rather than a new app having to be created, yeah?
We'll see.
Okay. Am I going to get any points out of
it? Probably not.
No, I don't think so.
So, onto the Conscious ship dates. I'll give you mine first just to kind of keep it rotating round. I think it'll be split. US will be March and it'll be September before we get anything in this in the UK. So I'm being quite negative about the old release dates. And the only reason I'm saying that is if you look at the previous first-gen releases of the products, it's always been the case that they've done US first and almost got that market off the ground and then started to pick up other places around the world. And only once they're up and running, you know, like, so maybe like the second-gen, they'll say, right, everybody can get it at the same time because we've got all the infrastructure in place now and we've got all the support networks in place and we've got the carrier, you know, partnerships in place. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I'd love it if they turned around and said it's a worldwide release or it's in these markets on the same day, you know, and I just can't see it. Henry.
Yeah, I think you will be able to order it on the day, but I don't think it will be shipping until March. I think you're right. UK? Oh, I'm going to stick my neck out. I'm going to say we'll be able to order it on the same day as well.
You just want to see me spend money.
Okay. I think we'll be able to buy it on from next week.
So I've... From next week?
From next week. We'll be able to order it. It won't be delivered until
March.
Look
at you. Look at you and your...
So I've said, I think I'm going to be... Oh, there you go. I'm going to be able to get my hands on one. Well, I mean, so UK date, I think, is going to be June. I don't know why that's sticking out. There's part of me which thinks, could they have pulled off the impossible and actually have this thing ready to ship within a week? From, you know, after week after the show. I don't know. But I think June is realistic for UK.
And the final question... How much will it cost? And I'm just going to go for a UK cost.
Yeah.
But I'll let you guys go first.
Okay. I have put down here £700 for the device.
Wow.
I think I can't see it being any. I mean, an iPhone unsubsidized costs, you know, 500 and something quid. So 700 quid is maybe low. Yeah, I think it is going to be low, but I'm going to stick with it anyway. There we go. There'll be mobile things as well going, as in subsidized rates.
Now, sorry, Chris, but you said there were two versions of this, so you've got to give us two prices.
good point. In fact, that gives me a way out. I think the lower cost price is going to be 700 quid. The full spec'd one is going to be 900 quid.
Henry.
I'm going for, I'll say 600 quid.
Oh, madness. Right. I'm going for 800.
So we've got 6, 7, 8 and 9.
Yep.
Excellent.
I was so tempted to say £1,000 here because I really do think it will be uber expensive.
When they come in and say, 1,500 quid. Yeah.
And you'll be pleased to know, listeners, that's it. That's that segment over.
Gee,
I bet you can't wait till next week to find out which one of us lost, and what the forfeit was.
Oh dear!
Listen, you can listen live to the show and have. I'm going to back out of that comment.
Yeah, you're rabbiting on like a madman.
Sorry, man.
No, that's okay. We're now going to do some real news. Things that happened this week. Well, not really. Well, we are. So,
well, are we or aren't we? God.
Well,
I think like keeping the listeners on edge.
We are. Amazon's running scared. So over the last week, three different announcements from Amazon. And I think it just shows you they know what's coming. So they have increased the royalty options for publishers. So that now it's now this 70-30 split, the same as the App Store. Bizarrely, they've been giving away the Kindle for free, which is only similar to a select band of people. So it's not to like thousands of people. But if you're a heavy Amazon user in America, adverts were popping up saying, why don't you order a Kindle? If you don't like it, we'll refund you the money and you get to keep it. Which seems a bit of
Do you get to keep it and still keep downloading books on a daily basis?
Yeah.
Well, I don't care about Amazon that much that I'm not going to reel it back and say I didn't like it.
And the third thing was they're opening up for developers. So they're now looking at applications that are going to appear on the Kindle. But that just looks rubbish. You know, and I guess that's the thing. I've got this horrible e-ink black and white screen. I just can't see that working.
Is it a horrible screen? I've never seen one in the flesh.
I've seen the videos of it enough to think that it's great for reading, but I can't understand an application working on it very well.
No, not at all.
Maybe, I don't know, Scrabble or something like that. But
Or Snake.
Yeah, I just can't see. So all seems a little bit desperate.
They're going to have to be seen to react somehow or differentiate themselves at least.
Well, I just wonder if the tablet takes off the same way as iPhone does, would they then just say, sod it, I don't really care about the hardware, it's more about the software?
I think the Kindle is a very, very different thing from this. From what this tablet's going to be, so I don't think they even need to react or worry about it really.
I'm not so sure. I think if Apple come up with something that is like redefines this is what an e-book reader should be, this is what you really want, I can see the Amazon view being sod it, You know, our market is more the we want to be the iTunes for books. Maybe that's just me. We also heard from New York Times have finally announced that yes, they're going to move to a paid model.
At least they've said something.
Indeed. So it's going to be free access to a certain number of articles per month, and after that, then you pay up, which is exactly the same as what other people are doing.
Yeah, and it seems like the most sensible option and a realistic option. You know, if you just come here once in every while, then fair enough, have a look around. If you're a heavy user, then, you know, pay us for it. And I think if you're a subscriber already to the New York Times, you also get this free access, or maybe that's not been confirmed yet, but certainly that's what people are assuming.
And the bizarre bit for me, it's going to be 2011, so they can build in their paywalls.
I know, why it takes so long?
I want a job at their firm. If I've got a year to do that.
That's the same people that don't update IE6 going, oh, paywalls, that's going to take us a while.
Speaking of IE6.
Aye.
So, a lot of China fallout this week, and we've got a lot of material in our show notes, which will mean I've got to type lots later on. But basically, we can sum it up as Germany has warned. Basically, the German government has said, don't use IE. There's plenty of other browsers that you should be using. Which was interesting to see that coming from a government all its people. France.
And it's had a reaction, and the people reacted.
So the market share, you know, altered significantly in Germany over a few days, didn't it?
Yep.
And France did the same too. So they came out with the same advice. Microsoft at the same time was saying, don't worry, it's not that bad.
No, nothing to worry about. It's only IE6, which is really old anyway, and only when it's running on XP, which is, I mean, so it's all good, but hang on a sec, we'll release a patch anyway.
Yeah, so that was about our thing. Don't worry about it, don't change, but by the way, here's a patch.
Yeah.
But the other thing that was odd was like, don't worry about it, here's a patch, but you really shouldn't be using XP either, because it's pretty crap. So, go to Windows 7!
I mean, again, that was kind of the UK response as well was, isn't it more that the UK's lot of their government agencies are still using really, really old stuff, so IE6 and XP as the default. And Microsoft are pretty much saying that's just not secure anymore. We don't keep that as up-to-date as our latest stuff, or it's just intrinsically less secure.
I think the government view was that, but you're not, you know, where they're using IE6 isn't on a kind of open network that we're currently using it if you're a home user. You know, so it's a much more secure network. Is the government's take on why it's not a risk at the moment?
When I used to work at a council, though, I'm pretty sure they're still all running IE6 and XP. I just think that someone came out this week and said that if IT firms haven't, or IT departments haven't updated since IE6 and XP, then that's malpractice. And I think they're right.
Well, I was working for a very large insurance company with several thousand seats, and they're still in XP and IE6.
Well, a lot of people will be in XP. A lot of businesses would not upgrade to Vista.
No.
I mean, it was very, very painful. You know, so there was never a good enough business reason to upgrade.
But there was no reason not to upgrade the browsers.
Well,
you sound like an IT guy.
But I am.
Exactly.
And I could list off quite a few packages that I know aren't supporting another browser apart from IE6, which I know sounds bizarre, and it sounds bizarre in this really up to date modern world that we're all talking about. But you know, there's a lot of business stuff out there that is just not keeping up to date.
I just think it's one of those things, that's more the point. It's just not keeping things up to date, and that's become endemic. Yeah, no, because one thing falls out of date, then they haven't done anything about it. And I think it's the same for IT departments across everywhere.
The thing with IE6, though, was that it allowed you to do a whole load of stuff with ActiveX components and that kind of thing, which weren't really web standards. They were Microsoft standards. So the whole world has now moved on to kind of web standard stuff. But guys that really bought into the Microsoft stuff, you are pretty much kind of stuck with IE6 and things. So, and
the interesting thing that's come out since we did the last podcast was that it wasn't just IE6 outside the Google network and, you know, people hacking in, you know, through Gmail. It was IE6 in use at Google as well. It was actually, you know, so they are doing an internal investigation as to why IE6 on their own network. You know, so it's all right saying IT departments and bashing all these big companies, but
No, just stop there. It is all right to bash him. That's fine.
Shut up. So I guess the two other thing that's happened, Google's now postponed some phone launches in China.
Yes, they haven't said they're not going to, have they? They've just said we're not doing it yet.
And there's also, I mean, I guess there's some strained relations between the US and China over this.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton came out with a speech sort of condemning China for blocking internet use. And I think Obama's now come into the frame and said he finds it worrying, something along those lines. So it's quite a big fallout, really.
Fantastic. Moving on. But staying with Google, YouTube is now moving into pay-per-view and movie rentals, Chris.
So it's at the moment it's going to be in the US, and it's not started yet. It's going to be towards the end of this month, so it's pretty soon. But they're looking to actually supply a stream of a movie for about £2.50. You have a 48-hour period then in which to watch the movie stream. And then going forward, they're looking to maybe include pay-per-view events. You know, think, I don't know whether it's going to be things like boxing matches, but as we do now, so you can supply your content on a pay-per-view basis.
So alongside that, there's also news that they've actually got the contract or won the rights for the Indian Cricket League. No, the Indian Premier League, sorry.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is a separate right from TV rights as well.
Yep.
So YouTube are going to be streaming the Indian Premier League cricket everywhere except for the USA. Throughout the whole season. Big deal.
Well, it's interesting,
it is a big deal,
because...
Not sarcastic, big deal.
No, well, the interesting thing for me is I never thought of YouTube as a rival to Sky. But if I think of the size of Google and I think of the backing they've got, I mean, imagine if YouTube got the rights to Premiership.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, if they were in the, or if, you know, does it fit within TV rights, or is this a completely separate?
Yeah, but what if they bought the TV rights as well and decided not to use them?
Yeah,
what
just
if they just said,
clamp everyone out,
it.
So you had to go through it? Yeah,
yeah. You know, in the same way that Sky have bought it up and they forced everybody to start looking at, you know, Sky as the only option to view it or whatever. What happens if they just said, sod this, I'm buying it all. The only way to watch it is through YouTube.
I mean, as ever, I don't think the technology is there to quite support that kind of level of usage yet.
Not so sure.
But then again, we all said that it was unfair that it was all going to this closed platform, via Sky Dishes when it all went to Sky.
It is starting to get there, but if you look at, you know, there were some rumours through the week that Microsoft were trying to do deals with ESPN to start, you know, streaming sport on the 360. And again, that was probably more America than here.
Is it just me though? Do you get full HD streaming off YouTube?
Well, no. And I guess it depends what you call full HD. Yes, you'll get an HD resolution, but to me, you don't get the bitrate.
Okay. I don't think it's anywhere near having. Do you even think you have the resolution? I thought it was much lower. I thought it was
it's got a, but it is a 720p. You can go on and you'll see 720p and you'll see 1080p resolutions, but the bitrate's not there. You know,
but then again, on Freeview HD, they're saying all the bit rates are quite low anyway. I mean, still even then, the bit rates are still huge compared to online at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. But there's a subtle difference too. So yes, there's HD content there, and you can go and watch HD video, but the bit rate's not there when I watch it compared to, you know, say you're watching a Blu-ray or you're watching some other sources. And we probably need. I mean, Shaquille knows a bit more about this kind of stuff than me. I'm just a bit of a bluffer. like most things.
Really?
So, something else that I thought was interesting YouTube were doing this week, there was a kind of new look and feel. Just kind of cleaned it up a little bit, made it a bit cleaner to look at. And they've also started trialling HTML5. So instead of needing the Flash plugin to view content, you can now switch on this. I think it's on their test tube. So if you go to youtube.com/testtube, you can now switch on HTML5 as an option. And that worked really well. No more Flash. My CPU levels didn't rise up thanks to Adobe's great work on Flash in the Mac. Just thought I'd get another kick in there as well. And the same day, Vimeo also rolled out HTML5 support as well. Death to Flash, I've written dramatically.
I think you're probably, a bit ahead of the game there.
I'd rather be ahead than behind. Windows user.
As a Mac user, you really do want Flash to die horribly.
Yeah, you just
because it already dies horribly when you try and run it.
It's annoying. It's something that you take totally for granted. Yeah. And then you look at it in the Mac and you go, what the hell is that? What's going on?
I've got four cores running my CPU, and they're all running at, you know, 150%. And why is that? Oh, because I've got some flash video running on YouTube.
It's not so bad if you know you're running it. You know, so if you've wanted to watch a stream, fine. But if it's some crappy little advert that's running in the top corner of your screen, sod off. Yes, indeed. Anyway, talking of being ahead, the UK government last week launched Open Data. So if you visit data.gov.uk, this is a website that's at the moment got just under 3,000 data sets, UK-based data sets, that are freely available for developers to take advantage of. So this is the work that Tim Berners-Lee has been doing over the last year, and it seems to be accepted that it's actually very, very good. So a lot of developers in this sphere of data mining and putting mashups together are actually really, really impressed with it and really, really happy that it's now launched.
So, and they've said it's a worldwide example of good practice.
Yes.
Which is good to, you know, to think that we've actually come up with something first.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the thing is, it's the American one launched last year, and seemingly off the back of that, it was Brown had a conversation with Tim Berners-Lee and said, how do we do it? And that's what kicked it off. And a year later, we've got something that seems to be ahead of everybody else.
It's nice to see that also, I think over the time that we've been doing the podcast, this has been a kind of, people have been calling out for this to be opened up and freed up. And it's happened, and it's happened pretty quick.
Yeah, definitely. So, very impressed. Only downside, seemed to confirm yesterday that the path will remain within Royal Mail hands. So this is the, I can't remember the actual thing.
Postcode address file, is it?
Yeah, I don't know if that's it. So this is basically the postcode file that is maintained and updated by the Royal Mail and is usually charged a lot of money to access. There had been a petition to say, let's open it up, if not to everybody, at least to, you know, non-profit or charitable organisations and try and leverage that data for the good of people. But it looks like that won't be. So that's a bit of a shame.
No, it's more than that. It's just wrong.
It's a bit of a shame. I can see that.
It's bad. It's wrong. It's not right.
The bit I don't like about it is it's, well, and I don't know, am I right in saying this? It's taxpayers' money that's keeping it up to date. I'm not sure about that.
I think it was certainly taxpayers' money that set it all up. I think the Royal Mail get grant to do the work on it. I'm probably talking out my ass.
It's never stopped you before.
It's not, you're right.
But let's not joke around, because who knows what might happen.
You could get banned from an airport.
You could get banned from an airport, or worse, you could be, you could face court proceedings. So there was this story came out through the week, and I'm still kind of like bemused about how it happened. But during the bad weather that we had in the UK, there was a guy who was obviously going to, his flight was from Robin Hood Airport, which I still think is a cracking name for an airport. And he put up a tweet just complaining about the fact that the airport was closed. And in the tweet, Robin Hood Airport's closed, you've got a week and about to get your shit together, otherwise I'm blowing the airport sky high. Now, I don't think anything too wrong with that. It's a tweet. And it's private. It's to his, I guess, anybody that's following him. But a week after he posted this, he was arrested under the Terrorism Act and questioned for 7 hours by detectives. because
some woman highlighted this tweet, didn't she?
Yeah. So a woman's highlighted it as a threat, and they've interpreted his post as a security threat. Worse, he was then released on bail and also suspended from work pending an internal investigation. And he's also been banned from Robin Hood Airport for life. So,
and all, I mean, okay, he maybe didn't word it particularly jokingly, but surely a quick conversation or a quick investigation,
yes,
and you can tell someone's intention then.
Yes,
this is the terrorists have won, basically.
Well, the terrorists have won. Also, I mean, why are the police wasting time on this? You know, there is far more important things to be out than doing. And also, how did they find them so quickly? Seemingly it was within hours of the complaint being made, there was a chap on his door.
Maybe, I mean, I guess so. They have to take things seriously. I mean, at the moment, I think didn't the terror threat level go up yesterday to an attack is imminent?
Yeah, but you know why that
is. Even though they said there's no attack. I don't know, why is that?
There's a general election coming up, so obviously...
You think they've just done it for the period of the election?
Yeah, just make everybody scared. We're at war because look how high our terror level is. Anyway, maybe I'm just being cynical. Maybe the House of Parliament will get blown up next week and we'll all go, ah, that's
don't
why.
Say that.
I said, don't say that. We're all in for it now. You'll have guys around your door.
I would just be joking by saying that.
Yeah, can we say that was a joke, please? Sark Mark.
Sark Mark. It's okay, I'll put little asterisks around it all just to say I'm joking. Some good news. So BT fibre to cabinet pricing. Well, I'm saying good news, I guess that depends on your point of view. So this is the 21st century network stuff they've been rolling out over the last, I guess they've been talking about it for about 3 years now.
So putting fibre cables to the green boxes at the corner of your street, basically.
Yes. Now, they've been starting to roll it out to the first few exchanges, and that's them just announced the prices now. So the basic package... will be £50, and I've not actually written down the speeds, which is helpful.
It's a 40 meg download and up to 10 meg upload.
Yeah, that's in the high end one, isn't it?
I don't think it's much different from the low one, except for the cap, isn't it?
Ah, okay. I think the upload is different. So in the lower one, the upload's 2 meg, but they're talking about an upload of up to 10 meg.
I think it depends how close you are to the box as to whether you can get the 10 meg upload.
Yeah. And it's £20 a month with a 20 gig per month usage allowance, which is not very much.
And that's the low one again, isn't it?
The other package is £25 a month. The low package has also got a £50 connection charge. So the other package is £25 a month, no connection card charge, and you get the better upload and no data cap.
You'd be silly not to go for the high one, basically, wouldn't you?
Yes, and both are 18-month contracts, which seems slightly longer than most of the broadband contracts I've known recently have all been 12 months.
Yeah.
So I was quite surprised at the 18-month. It's almost aligning itself with the phone market, which seems to be getting longer and longer. Mm-hmm. Boo.
Well, BT's contracts are all 18 months. They have been for... a considerable length of time now.
Ah, the voice of reason. Yeah.
I mean, the thing for me is that, yes, this is all very good and it's what we want and it's what we want to see happening, but it's always the same exchanges that keep getting all the upgrades.
So yes, fantastic.
Exactly. So the people who've already got unbundled and are already seeing some pretty good speeds already.
Yeah, it's great.
Getting even better speeds. Fantastic. And there's people like me left out in the cold all the time. Well,
do. Well, come on. You could write to your MP and complain. You could write to BT, or just move.
Move.
No, I know it's unrealistic because they're always going to roll it out to the areas that are easy, which is always going to be cities. So it's always going to be the same people that are going to get the latest stuff.
Woohoo!
So fair enough in one way, but it's just a bit frustrating that somebody's now going to be able to be getting, you know, well, in fact, people can get 50 megs on the cable, can't they? So.
Yep. Me, yeah. Woo! Sorry.
Are you on the 50 meg cable?
No, I went to O2 because I was paying them the money. I went to pay them the money, so I went a bit tight, to be honest. So something to point out as well is that BT do quite a lot of throttling, and I was quite surprised at how much throttling they now do. So
that is the sound of the throttle.
Yeah. So from 4 p.m. to midnight weekdays, and from 9 a.m. to midnight at weekends. So basically, any time that you're likely to be awake, your bandwidth is throttled on their unlimited package.
Wow, that's pretty severe, isn't it?
Virgin's the same, apart from in the 50 meg Virgin service, there's no throttling at all. But I still think by the end of this year, they'll end up just throttling, and I just can't believe they'll leave that fully open. And that's BT fibre to cabinet.
Very good.
And even though it's in my area, I can't see me. I think I want other people to be guinea pigs. I won't be jumping on that anytime soon.
I mean, it seems to me like they've priced it very well.
I think, well, but I think they've priced it knowing that the throttling keeps them safe.
Mm. So yes, you'd like to see some real world examples of usage.
Yeah. You know, so the throttling, they've talked about peer-to-peer, but you know, if I'm watching iPlayer, does it start to kick in? You know, I mean, the Virgin throttling wasn't so much based on type, it was just based on the amount you could download. You know, so once you got to your, like, 2 or 3 gig, it then just throttled you down to a slower speed. You know, so if I'm watching iPlayer and then suddenly the speed drops, that's not much use.
So basically you're going to have to wait 6 months probably before you've got a good enough data set to see whether it's worthwhile.
I think so. Mm-hmm. A big move from Nokia this week. We've mentioned the Ovi store before. So Ovi Maps was launched, which is a free turn-by-turn navigation software, now available for roughly 20 million Nokia handsets around the world. Interestingly, the maps are stored locally, so you don't need a continuous data connection, unlike the Google option. Traffic information in 10 countries, you get lane assistance and speed trap warnings, there's pedestrian modes, and free Lonely Planet Michelin travel guides. I was very impressed.
That sounds pretty impressive to be giving that away.
Yep, definitely. And again, TomTom shares dropped 10%, within an hour of this announcement. And I think it's just this. I think you're just seeing a death knell of specific sat-nav hardware. You know, the phone hardware is now more than capable of doing what your sat-nav did.
Yeah, now that the GPS is good enough to locate you within, an accuracy that keeps you on the right road within the phone itself. It seems, why have a dedicated piece of hardware?
Yep, definitely.
So, good move by Nokia. And I think it's a move of a company in catch-up. Apple Store.
Amazing how many handsets that covers.
It's astonishing. If you look at the list, and we'll put the link in the show notes, if you look at the list of handsets it covers with more to come, and it's in software terms, it's a fairly massive rollout. It's just amazing.
I think we forget how big Nokia are, really. It's easy to overlook them with all the other, with the iPhone being such a buzz thing at the moment.
They've taken a knock because at the moment, all we talk about is iPhone or Android or Palm, or we laugh at Microsoft and we kind of forget that Nokia
are quietly sat there with their huge share of the market.
Yeah, we've got a huge market share, and also you've got things like the N900 came out, which got good reviews, but.
An amazing piece of kit, that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, it's just not ticking the boxes for us.
And they're clearly still releasing handsets that meet the everyday requirements of a lot of people who don't want a smartphone, but have got enough capability to do things like turn-by-turn, which is amazing.
Definitely.
And Nokia, of course, if you want to see how Finland is doing as a country, it's very easy because you just look at... Nokia
shares.
Because basically almost all the GDP of Finland is based on Nokia. I mean, we only know them for phones and things, but they're just absolutely huge.
Yeah, that's a very good point. So a couple of stories just to wrap us up for today. I don't know if you guys downloaded it. I downloaded GTA Chinatown Wars on the iPhone that came out through the week.
I haven't, no.
It's $9.99, which a lot of people are like, it's too expensive. And it's like, well, when it came out in the DS and the PSP, it was like $20 or $25. So, what are you complaining about?
More than that, probably.
Yeah. And it's the same version. It's the same game.
Which was rated on the DS, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I've actually played it a bit. So, I mean, I've put in some comments, which were just on day one, which was graphically, really, really nice. Presented really well. And no slowdown, plays excellently. Touchscreen controls I found a bit fiddly, but as you play, you do get used to them. But it's the same issues that if you've got issues with touchscreen, you think you're going to have issues
still
with the game.
Still would be better with buttons, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'm not going to sit here and deny it. If you could have some... But then, would I carry around some other controller that fits around it? Probably not. And I'm only just scratching the surface on it. It's massive. So if you're looking for, if you're doing a lot of travelling, you want something to occupy the time, I think this is a really good buy. A really good buy.
And it doesn't, I mean, again, I never played the DS game either, but people rated it. But is it just like the GTA of old?
Top down, and there's a lot of missions and a lot of depth, and you can almost ignore bits of the game, like you can in other GTA games. You can do everything, or you can just do the kind of core bits. So very impressive. And another bit of game news was Sony have delayed their motion controller release.
Yeah, so they came out and said that they're not going to release it now until autumn, so probably just ahead of Natal. But it looks like it's because there's no games for it. It's not necessarily that the hardware is not ready. It's just no one's been able to get the games ready in time. So it's, again, more stories on the front that it's impossible to develop for the PS3. I put here that PS4 has to solve this problem. Microsoft have got this problem solved with their development tools. But PS4 has to do something about it. I don't know what your thoughts are, but that was the latest news anyway, that it was because there were no games for it, not necessarily that the hardware wasn't ready.
Yeah, no, it's much the same. And I do think they had a jump, but they've lost that jump now. I can see both of them coming out towards Christmas.
I mean, the demos that they showed looked very impressive. So when it'll come out, I'm sure it'll be good.
They looked really good, those demos of things.
Yeah. And I mean, it seemed to take what the Wii was doing just another step further.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm still not convinced about Natal at all, to be honest.
More stories about lag and how it could end up being possible to use.
Yeah. Our final news story is...
Oh, God.
All around Spotify and viral marketing, Henry.
Yeah, well, that's right. On the Spotify website in France, they've launched a competition for you to record a 30-second advert for Spotify, and then you email it in, and the 5 best ads get a free premium subscription to Spotify for 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah.
How much do ad agencies charge for adverts? Certainly more than like 30 quid.
Well, this is there's a few comments on the article there that the folks in France, the French people, are definitely thinking that this isn't very generous, shall we say.
You could give it for life, surely, after doing that.
I do have to confess that this whole article was in French and all the comments were also in French, so I could just be making this all up completely.
you haven't come across the delights of Google Translate, then?
Well, yeah, but it's not always that helpful, is it?
No.
Not when it just turns around and goes, hoi, hoi, hoi.
Onion and garlic.
And... And that same racist news story.
British agent.
We'll lead us on to our picks. Chris, why don't you take us through yours?
Okay, hang on.
Have you lost it completely?
I have, sorry.
Well, I can do. I'll do mine if you want.
Go on, yeah, please.
I'll do mine. Huff Duffer. Huff Duffer. I do like my podcasts. But I guess the thing that I do have issue with is just finding new podcasts. It's not always easy. You get kind of stuck in a rut, listening to the same ones, listening to Digital Outbox all the time. You know, you need to listen to something fresh. And Huff Duffer is a way of trying to aggregate and drive in different podcasts. So you register on huffduffer.com, you create an account, and you can then drag a bookmarklet onto your browser. If you see a bit of audio somewhere that you want to capture for later, you can huff-duff it. So you click your bookmarklet, you tag it, you give it a name, and then that appears on the huff-duffer website. Other people can then pick it up and add it to their queue. And against your account, you've got an RSS feed. So you can add that RSS feed to iTunes, and later on that'll download the content you've huff-duffed. And the nice thing is you can see what's popular, and it just leads you into all sorts of other things that you know, iTunes doesn't really give you. iTunes is giving you some charts and what's new, and that's really it. I just find that it's almost like a kind of dig equivalent for podcasts or for that kind of audio. And I've used it for a couple of weeks now, and it's just been nice to pick up some just totally weird and wacky podcasts. And because you're not listening to the whole series, you're only picking up maybe one-offs, maybe where different people have appeared, or there's been an interview with a certain director or a certain band. It means you're just finding new content all the time. So I've been using that quite a bit and really impressed.
And good name.
And the name's excellent, Huff Duffer.
Brilliant.
Right, Chris. Okay,
I feel together enough now. So my pick comes from the fact that my laptop died recently. I'm getting annoyed about
that's
not being
a shame.
Not having any mobile computing. So I've been doing all the kind of usual research about looking around what's out there and what I might like to buy. I mean, the fact is I haven't got any money at the moment, but this is the one I would buy.
God, had this I got, is depressing.
Had I got a spare few hundred quid. But basically, it's I was looking at netbook options, but the problem is they all come with their kind of, they're crippled by the processor, basically, for any more in-depth tasks. So one of my criteria is that I would like to be able to output the media to my lounge TV so I can run Boxy and things like that. So I came across this, it's called the Acer Aspire Timeline 1810TZ. But basically, it's the form factor of a netbook, so it's only 11.3 screen. It's tiny in the flesh. Yet it's got good power under the bonnet. It has a dual core processor. It's only 1.3 megahertz, but it's ample according to reviews. I've used one in the flesh in PC World, but not done any tests or anything like that. But it uses an ultra low voltage processor, which keeps the battery life at 8 hours. So you've got a tiny form factor with enough power to output. It's got an HDMI output, so you can whack it onto your screen. And it comes with, you know, the version I want, which is called the Olympic Edition. It comes with 4 gig of RAM, 500 gig hard disk, and it's got Bluetooth as well. And it's Windows 7 Home Premium, so it's and 64-bit version. And that comes at $550. So it's more, obviously, than your netbooks, but I think the extra money is worthwhile for the productivity you get out of it. And as soon as I got some cash together, I'll be getting one, I think.
No, it's a really good spec for the price, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice pick. So I guess you're hoping that Acer now send you one so you don't need to buy one.
Well, I wouldn't say no.
Yeah, actually, Acer are interesting because, you know, a few years ago, I would never have recommended them at all. The terrible quality problems and really quite just pretty dodgy machines, really. Had this, a number of people that kind of had them and they kind of broke within, you know, just outside warranty type things. But they've seen we've got their act together recently and there's a lot of much better machines that's coming out because they were always very good spec for price.
Yeah.
But
this feels very, very solid for a small device. It's not aluminium, it's not, you know, a unibody design or anything like that. But for the size of it, it's a solid device. The keyboard is brilliant, compared to some of the small keyboards out there. They've done a very, very good job and it doesn't feel like it bends or it doesn't, you know, doesn't creak or anything. It feels good. So I was dead impressed. They're coming out with some pretty compelling devices at the moment.
Yeah,
so
both Acer and Asus as well.
They've got a same version of this thing that I've used as my pick, but they've actually got a swivel screen so you can rotate it into a tablet if you want as well, and it's touchscreen.
Mm.
So there's some pretty compelling things out there.
Very good. Henry, your pick this week?
Well, it's winter, isn't it? It's a bit, you know, dark and cold and a bit, you know, a bit depressing. So this is just a little bit of fun. iPhone app called Smack Talk, and just, you know, does it is basically just changes the pitch or the speed of your voice. Okay, but actually, the way it's been put together is really very good. It's very good. So you have a little picture of a hamster, and you know, you can make your voice just sound a bit hamsterish. Or like a dog or a cat or a, you know, it's just this little thing moves its mouth in response to what you've said and how it's changed your voice. And you can save your top five chipmunk type things. And it is incredibly cheesy, but, you know, worth at least 5 minutes of fun and definitely worth the 59p for the amount of fun that you get out of it. Definitely, a friend of mine is a lecturer at one of the local colleges here, and he often uses it to slag off his students.
Now that's 59p well spent, I'm sure of him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking 59p to talk like Chris. That's ideal.
Can I talk like you?
Well, I don't know. Can you?
Maybe that costs more than 59p.
Right, we're done. Just over the hour as well, I'm amazed.
I am amazed.
So, if you want to find out more about us, our website is digitaloudbox.com. Our email address is info@digitaloudbox.com. And we're on Twitter and Skype as digitaloudbox. If you want to find more on moi, Blog is iandd.net and Twitter is Shweepa. Henry.
I'm on Twitter as TalkRubarb and my blog is talkrubarb.com/WordPress.
And Chris.
So I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
And there you go. So we're all going to be tuned in on Wednesday night then.
Glued to the screen.
I'm definitely going to be watching it.
The worst thing is,
however that might end,
I don't think I will be.
What?
which is causing me consternations right now.
Well, we'll have to do. We'll have to be tweeting the updates and telling you how few points you're getting.
I'm just more gutted that I'll probably won't watch it live. I need to cocoon myself away from everybody and then come home late and watch it. Anyway, thanks for listening.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Done it again.
So you're not...
Skype only puts effects on the last bit of music, not the first.
Puts effects on?
Yeah. When I was listening to it back then, it was
fine, mine. All good here.
It was like Transformers kind of music.
So you're not going to be back from working time, is that what you're saying?
No, I think I might miss it.
Got a bit of a cough coming on?
No. No, because I did have a bit of a cough for the week, so I worked from home for a day. From home. Which did actually mean I plugged my laptop in and worked from home, just in case any of the kind of guys who work are listening.
Well, I was going to say, actually, our listener base is probably not conducive to you saying
exactly. Hi, boss. So, I'm going to record an advert. I can't be arsed.
I can't be asked now.
I can't believe I've got that all lined up. And we're not going to do anything.
The Spotify is an amazing piece of software for listening to the music. If you like the music, you will love the Spotify. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I wish I could hear what you're saying. But I cannot. Oh, hello.
Hello, hello.
All that for 3 months premium content.
Do you know, I think we jumped the shark today.